I've lived a thousand lives. I've piloted a thousand souls. I've killed and fought and died just for another role.
This is the Happy Jacks RPG Podcast, a roundtable discussion that's a mix of friendship, humor, unbridled enthusiasm, and tabletop RPG topics sent in from around the world.
Just for another.
Hello, and welcome to Season 33, Episode 16 of the Happy Jacks RPG Podcast. My name is Kimmy.
And I'm Angie.
In today's episode, we talk about how do you balance PC Spotlight as a GM? We're going to specifically call out our good and bad habits, like specific to Angie and I.
I have some very specific bad habits.
same, big same. Emails, JD Grizz. From the Discord asks, when it's okay for your PC to be the center of attention? Mm-hmm. And Connor from Ireland asks how to deal with the character who needs to be talked into everything.
I know a Connor from Ireland.
Yeah.
You think it's the same one?
I don't know.
Probably not.
I mean, there's probably a lot of Connors.
There might be more than one Connor.
In Ireland, for sure. But I guess it just, if this is Connor from Ireland who lives in LA, the pool is smaller.
Yes.
Drastically.
That's true. But this Connor lives in Ireland and is part of my screenwriting crowd.
Oh.
So.
I don't know.
Could be.
It could be.
Yeah.
Connor from Ireland, now you have to write an email saying if you're Ingi's friend. Or just tell Ingi and he'll tell us next time.
Yeah. All
right. If you'd like to contribute a question or topic to the show, you can email us at happyjacksrpg@gmail.com. That's happyjacksrpg@gmail.com. Or you can drop a message in the mailbag channel in our Discord at happyjacks.org/discord. We were very flush with topics and emails for quite some time.
Mm.
We're starting to kind of make our way through them. So if you have something, write an email or a post in the Discord, friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're not stressed yet, but just
give
like...
give us your cues.
For a while, I didn't see the end coming. And now I'm starting to see the end. So send in more stuff.
Yeah, clean inbox is a terrifying thing.
I don't know what that's like. I literally have zero reference for that.
I have emails that have to be 10 years old.
So I'm looking at you right now, and Jason gives me shit about this all the time. 40,000.
40,000.
40,210.
I think I have like 600. But yeah. Every now and then I do clean it out on like a really awesome hyper-focused day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Well, I also have like... that's a combination of like 7 different email addresses.
Okay.
So it's not just one email address. It's also like a whole bunch of like Happy Jacks unreads that like go back like as long as that email address has existed.
Oh yeah.
I'm not going back and cleaning up Stu's mess.
I also use mine for notes.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So things for scripts that I'm working on or games that I'm working on, you know, I'll put in the headline.
Oh yeah.
Because if I put it into a notes app, I'll just close that app and never look at it again. And if it comes to me in an email the next day, I'll be like, wait, what's this? Oh, that's right. I had a good idea once.
Yeah. Once upon a time, there was a good idea.
Yeah. And then I can just search them.
Yeah. And I would just like to point out that that wasn't hyperbole for me. Like I legit, it's 40,210. Like I know I am like the queen of hyperbole and I overstate things a lot. It's legit a number I read off my phone. It's fine. Everything's fine. And yeah, don't tell Jason. Okay. Anyway, continuing on. Announcements. We have a Savage Worlds actual play.
What? That sounds awesome.
GM'd by Ingi.
Me?
That's starting up on April 4th.
Oh my God, I better get ready.
Yeah, it's very exciting. We have some... it's interesting because you have a collection of players who are, some of whom are very familiar to us, but are going to be new for the Happy Jacks audience.
Yes.
So it's going to be very fun.
It's really exciting. Two of them were in the one shot.
Yes.
That I GM'd a couple weeks ago and they're so awesome.
Yeah. Darby and Vixie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just very excited. We've been, now that we're like cons in the LA area and like gaming groups have started meeting up again at like local gaming shops and stuff like that, we're starting to like run into meeting new people again.
Yes.
Which has always been one of my favorite things about this whole thing, like gaming in general, but also like Happy Jacks, is like going and playing with someone and being like, you're amazing, cool, come join our club.
Yeah.
Like, So that's been really neat to have that story happen again. Yeah. Well, and like Darby, I met at Big Bad Con, and it was just, it's just lots of fun.
Yeah, Brian and I been playing together since the pandemic. Like, he's part of my like Wednesday night awesome group. Awesome. And he and I are turning the world that we're going to be playing in into a book.
That's amazing.
So, yeah.
Yeah, he has played in a bunch of Happy Jacks one-shots, especially at the cons.
Yeah.
When we used to stream live from the conventions at Strategic Con, we used to do a ton of games. I'm glad we don't do that anymore. I loved doing it, but it was also exhausting to manage that and also run games at the same time. People would run back and forth. Hey, Kimmy, we're having a problem with the stream. Okay, you all sit here and do the thing. I'll be right back. Like, just a lot of things to manage. I have enough stuff to manage. Yeah. But if you go back and watch those, you'll see Brian show up in those. So he's excited to come to his first, like, studio game.
I'm actually, like, it occurred to me, I'm excited to play with him in person.
Yeah.
Which I've only done, like, once or twice.
Interesting. That's so funny. And I'm just used to, like, hanging out and drinking with him. All right, so that'll be amazing. And April 4th, our next game days will be May 18th. So if you want to plan that, there's already a couple games posted. One of them is based on Deep Space Nine, which so it's I forget what it is. But it's like something on the promenade. You're just like, yes, yeah, I love it. So it's not going to be like, I mean, maybe it will be space fighting, but I get space mall vibes, and I love it. I really want to play in that game. I don't know if I can. But,
so funny. It's like, yeah. My brain was like, Deep Space Nine, space mall.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. That's
literally.
It's one of the biggest inspirations for Starscape. I love Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. And I just like, yes, promenade. Okay. Yeah. So those are our announcements for this month. Our Indie Designer of the Month, Logan Timmons, is a trans queer designer and the creative force behind Breathing Stories. You can find his games at breathingstories.itch.io. You can find him on tumblr.com/breathing-stories or on Twitter at @ink_and_stories. So this week, okay, this is actually... I was listening to one podcast that then referred to this other podcast and then was like, yeah, this podcast is by Logan Timmons. I was like, I'm sorry, what? I know this name. So because I was listening to this other podcast that talked about this, we're not talking about a game this week. Logan actually runs a very cool podcast that I went and ended up listening to called Lyrical Ludology, which I Googled. Actually, Inge Googled it before the show. The study of games.
Yes.
Which is really cool because I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm sure it's an actual thing. So
all I could think of was like, Ludo, love, Sarah, or whatever.
Yes. Lyrical Ludology is a short-form interview podcast about lyric games and that niche in the tabletop RPG hobby. And each episode is about 10 to 15 minutes, very easily digestible, one at a time, and perfect for a binge listen if that's like more your style. And it's suitable for fans of lyric games and those who have never heard of them also. And I was only able to listen to the first couple episodes. There's only like 7 or 8 of them. It's very new. Mm-hmm. So it may be something that started since I talked to Logan about being our Indie Designer of the Month. The first few are with Jay Dragon. And it's very interesting. Like, Jay always has amazing design things to say, especially about the word choice and the point of view that a RPG book is written from. I highly suggest they've done a bunch of different podcast appearances talking about those things, but it's a really great series. The first few episodes of Lyrical Ludology about that. And it's just really interesting to hear. I don't know. I love lyric games, whatever you think that is. And I especially love focusing on the voice that a game has, because I think that's very important. I think we've moved away, or we are moving away from the RPG as an instruction manual only.
Thank God. Thank God.
When
Benji and I wrote Space Bastards back in like 2002 or whatever it was, we like wrote it as a comedy book.
And
with jokes and like all the stuff in there, and people loved it. And it's like, okay, yeah, this has got to be what it is.
Yeah. And I think for so long, people have like been stuck in this. Well, you have the manual part that's just like facts and like you're putting a refrigerator together or IKEA furniture or whatever. And then there's like the good parts, like the role play parts.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like a lot of games are starting to balance that out better now.
Yeah.
Some of them, like some of the vampire books, go a little too far and you're like, I need the mechanic. Can I stop reading this novel part? It's great, but like, I need to figure out how to do this.
I've definitely gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, like, no, like what, what is this power? It's got a weird name.
Yeah. So, but I love the idea that you need to pick a narrator for your RPG book.
Mm-hmm.
Is the narrator, like, as in many books of yore, like an unnamed person at the publishing company who's just giving you facts and figures? Or, you know, is it the AI who runs your game? Or is it like the scientist who is studying the alien who's now murdering you all? Or like whatever it is, like, I think that's a really cool take. As long as you manage to balance that with it being a functional reference manual mm-hmm. as well. So I don't know.
Yeah, because like having standard way of saying things in your text is like so important to me now.
Yeah.
And certain games are way better at it than others.
Yeah. I feel like this is a whole nother topic, but we could go on.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway.
I could go on
and on. So Logan was recently like had a thing posted in the Rascal News site, which if you don't know about RPG news, the Rascal, you go there. The thing about lyric games is that there is no single agreed upon definition for what they are. That in and of itself is really interesting to me. I wanted to chat with designers around the world to hear their different perspectives and flesh out what is a lyric game. So that is Logan's reason for starting the podcast.
Love it.
Yeah, super interesting. And I love that like goal of like trying to triangulate all these artistic visions of what something is. And you probably won't ever arrive at like a conclusion. But it's still neat to figure out what it is to all these different people.
Which is sounds fascinating. I love that.
Yeah. Plus, I love it's like little 10-minute chunks.
Because
I don't drive very far. And so it's one of those things where it's like, I've got my long podcast that I listen to when I'm doing yard work or laundry or something like that. And then I've got like these like small podcasts like this that I like my 10-minute drive to work.
My little bites.
Yeah. This is what I listen to during my 20-minute recess break
because
I get recess too. All those things. So yeah. Anyway, so, you know, I'm supposed to usually like focus on a game, but I happen to run into this and Logan, it's a very good podcast. I really like it. And it's got, you know what? A lot for a new podcast, it has very good sound quality too.
That's always nice.
Yes. And, and I'm very forgiving of that. Having lived through a couple bumpy eras of the Happy Jacks RPG podcast, when we first moved into this studio, I had to learn the whole thing and we had to figure out all the little, because whenever you move an entire studio of equipment, weird ghosts appear and we tried to upgrade some equipment and it didn't like old equipment. And it just like, we had some bumps and I appreciate those of you who like lived through that time.
Oh yeah.
But so I'm forgiving of that, but I was very pleasantly surprised.
Dealing with camera that's not great right now, and then YouTube crunch.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Hot.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's our Indie Designer of the Month, and Logan will be our Indie Designer of the Month for one more weekend.
Oh.
And then it will be April.
We'll see April.
April.
That's my birthday.
Me too.
Yay.
And my kiddo.
Yay.
So many birthdays. And Jason too.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Jason and I are birthday twins. It's weird.
Cool. Yeah.
All right. It was one of those things like for our first couple years of friendship, we kept forgetting. And every year we got to like rediscover, hey, no way, that's your birthday. Yeah, that's your birthday. Because we both have ADHD and we forget things.
Oh, yeah. All the time. I know my brother or my sister's birthday. I know. My brother's birthday, I got mixed up with a concert that I went to, Depeche Mode, in the 80s. And I'm like, it's the second or the fourth. Can never remember. One of them was the concert, which was equally as important to me as my brother's birthday. Everybody else in my family, no idea.
That's funny.
Yep.
I think The Cure was my first concert, and I think Depeche Mode was my second concert. It was the 89 to 98 tour. The 98, and obviously. But
yeah.
I think that was, I remember, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that was the one.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, thanks everyone for hanging in there.
Yeah.
For our rambling tonight. It's okay. I'm enjoying it.
We're going to do it.
Yep. This is what happens when
you're going to hear friendship tonight, everybody.
Yeah, friendship. I mean, I feel like our friendship's almost old enough to drink.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, because. Yeah.
Because I was 18.
Okay.
When I joined FAIR.
I just remember where we were when we started hanging out.
It was at the Reef at Lake DeVore.
Yeah.
It was a long time ago.
Back along the fence with all the cottonwood.
Yeah.
That would blow in the afternoons, and you'd go to like sing a big note, and you'd take this big inhale, and the cottonwood would just boom, straight down your throat. And you'd be like,
yeah, dying. Yeah. Oh, the fun of singing at FAIR. And people are like, why don't you teach FAIR anymore? Because if I'm going to sing, I'm going to sing air conditioned.
Yes.
All right. Topic tonight. We finally made it to the topic. Good job.
Hey, all right.
How do you balance the PC spotlight as a GM? We're going to share our good and bad habits and where we learned them or developed them, I guess, for bad habits.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be like, I learned my bad habit from
watching you.
Yeah. All right. So first, I feel like we should start with bad habits.
Start with bad habits.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should totally start with bad habits.
I think one of my bad habits with this is I tend to, and I think it's partially from being a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to be the teacher who like calls on the kid who I don't think is paying attention. I think that's bullshitty and not good.
Yeah.
And if they're not paying attention, that makes them feel unsafe and not cool. But I sometimes do that as a GM. Like, not on purpose.
Because they're adults.
I mean, they are kind of adults. But I do it more like in my head, it clicks. I haven't shared, you know, this person hasn't been in the spotlight for a while. I want to make sure they get some. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I need to telegraph that more. Like before I'm like, and Hobbit, where have you been? Like, you know.
Now I want you to give me a 2-minute unprepared dissertation.
I mean, and I think because I'm a little spoiled. Like mm-hmm. I have a very good collection of players that I've worked hard to build over a decade.
Mm-hmm.
So
over the past few centuries.
Decades old.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I need to, one of my bad habits is to suddenly be like, Angie, what are you doing right now while this is happening?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And again, like it's not out of malice or like trying to get you. It's just like, oh, so-and-so hasn't done this. Why don't you do this now? And it's like, oh, my brain was there and not yours.
My Wednesday night group is full of actors and writers and like industry people. And so I can like, one of our players, Alora, I'm just going to name check her straight up, is kind of a audience member player, right? Mm-hmm. She likes to show up, hang out. Like she has like a beer and rolls dice and she's having a great time. But she's also an actor. So if I call on her, I know like she can go from I'm having a great time watching this to tears in like 2 seconds.
That's cool.
Yeah, I watched her like pull out a speech to like her ancestors and like,
whoa.
Yeah, like tears are going and all the stuff's happening. And I'm actually really good at like getting them to that point.
Yeah.
But people who aren't them, the group that I played with yesterday, like that I play with like once a month in person, mm-hmm. I can like be like, all right, you. And some of them are not comfortable like talking in character and they want to like, one of them was like, came up with some sort of suggestion. And I was like, that seems like it'd be a really fun thing to role play. And they were like, yeah, it does, John.
Yeah, for sure.
Fortunately, I have players who also bite back. So,
yeah.
I mean, Yeah.
Let's see. I think another bad habit, and this is like spotlight specific.
Yeah.
I definitely have to focus myself on paying attention to not just focusing on the really engaged players.
Mm-hmm.
Especially for my One Ring campaign, it was so easy for me. Like I love Kai. They are just amazing. And like we just became like we'd never really spent a lot of time together before that campaign. We met each other, and then we like became best friends and Lord of the Rings friends. And we're just like best Lord of the Rings friends
ever.
I'm
super jealous.
And like, there was so much that like between our friendship and between our shared understanding of Tolkien minutiae.
Yes.
That it was like so easy to just keep kind of pointing the spotlight that direction. And mm-hmm. it wasn't like pointing at other people as a chore. Like everyone was incredible at that table. It was just so easy because like Elvish stuff is like my favorite thing too.
Yeah.
And they would, and we'd just like go into the thing. And it was so fun for me to like drop in Easter eggs of really ridiculous, very obscure Tolkien stuff. And Kai would be like, and I'd be like, yeah, right? And everyone else would be like, what is happening?
What's happening? I'm throwing cookies at the crowd, but only one of the crowd.
Yeah. And so I have to be careful, especially, I mean, that was also kind of a gift to me to run that campaign and like have all of that together. I have to, when I am incredibly interested in something, I have to watch with my ADHD brain that I don't constantly keep turning back to that myself.
Yeah. I have a tendency to either have like one player that it's really, really like, I know what this guy can do or this girl or this they can do. And like, I can just throw the ball to that person anytime. And I love doing it because they play exactly how I want someone to play.
Yeah.
And everyone else feels kind of left out. And all of a sudden, like, I haven't done this in a while because I've gotten pretty good at like going back and forth. But certainly have had times where it's like, I am highlighting this person too much in the game where now they are the main character out of five people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's bad. What I will do to this day, though, is like starting up a new campaign. My Wednesday night group, we're finishing up one campaign and we're going to start another one. And there's one character, and it happens every time, one character I get a little obsessed with. And all those notes that I emailed to myself, half of them are about her. And I'm like, oh yeah, this would be cool, and this would be cool, and this would be cool. And I have to like sit down and go like, oh, okay, hang on a second. Like, I need to weave some other stuff in. And also, like, I can't fulfill all of her backstory stuff by like level three.
Yeah.
Like that's
And that's hard because you get so excited about stuff that they have come up with or things that they've contributed to the story.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's hard not to just like jump in feet first and like, you know, you want to try and pace that out. And sometimes that can be hard to like, you know, pace your enthusiasm for their contributions to the story.
Yeah. And then also like another thing that I've found, and I think this is kind of related, is throwing the spotlight on the, say, dungeon you're in. Because we're in the end game and I'm like, I have to make an end game dungeon that is, you know, relevant to these people. I mean, and that's what I love doing. I'm a writer. Like, I don't like taking other things. I'm like, get this out of here. And so I always have to like make my own thing. And I'm like, okay, well then it's going to go from here to there and here to there and here to there. And I'm like, okay, now I need to think of how can I weave character into every encounter and like make them feel it.
Yeah.
So they don't feel it if it's just going through and like smushing demons. Whatever. But if I can rip their hearts out at the same time, that's like what I really want to do.
That's your job, right? Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Ripping hearts out?
Yeah. Sadness and gay stuff. Yeah. That's
the GM's entire niche.
And then there's like during game where you've got like, say, a split party.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is how I originally read this question of like, I'm going to concentrate on you three and then we're going to go over to these two, which is something that I've gotten really good at.
Yeah.
Because especially like once I started writing like TV stuff.
Yeah.
Like that's like, if you watch, they will ramp up the drama and right at the maximum drama, that's when you switch over to the other people and you let them hang. You do not resolve that drama before moving to the next people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that before. The easiest reference for that is soap operas.
Yes.
Do soap operas. So it was somewhat cheesy. Pause and gasp. And then cut to the next scene. Yeah. It's like the dramatic timing for things. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's what one of the good habits of like sharing the spotlight.
Yes.
I think one thing I have gotten better about, I think partially because I suddenly am like, okay, it's your turn. What do you want? I think giving people thinking time is something that I've developed. Again, as a teacher, I probably should have already been doing that. but especially streaming, like I've gotten really good at being like, okay, Inge, like, what are you doing during this? And then if you have that look on your face, for everyone who's like listening, because this is actually a podcast, you can't see my face. Like, it's that frozen, like, deer in the headlights look of, I don't know. Like, then it's like,
I'm sorry, me, what?
Yeah. So that's when you, like, I pause. And I'm like, okay, so, like, you're here, right? And, like, I'll say, okay, Inge, what are you doing this whole time? So remember, so-and-so's there and so-and-so's there. Like, that's me stalling. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't, it's not me actually thinking you need to be reminded of where everybody is. That's me giving you, like, a break. And, like, if you're at a home table, like, when I'm running home games or, like, at local Game Stars and stuff, like I'm doing tomorrow, like, I'm not going to be, like, filling the silence. Like, it's just like, okay, take a minute to think about it. Sometimes I'm like, did anyone buy snacks? Should I, I'll go maybe buy snacks. Like, those are the different vibes.
You guys think about that. I'm a pee.
Yeah, exactly. The bathroom break. Yes. All those moments of, like, you know, giving thinking time. I think I've gotten very good at that part.
Yeah, I've gotten good at that. And the other thing I've gotten really good at with, like, rejoining this group and, like, hearing everyone else's advice and just, like, actually, like, looking into it a bunch is giving them thinking time before game and, like, collaborating with them and conspiring with them sometimes. Or just being like, hey, at some point tonight, you're going to be asked about this thing. So, like, have that on your mind. Do you remember when we did that? Because also, like, something that might be fresh in my mind or like stuck with me might be something that flew past them.
Yeah.
And it also could have happened like 8 months, a year and a half ago. And they're like, wait, the what now?
Yeah.
You're or like, it could have been a long week.
Yeah.
They don't remember.
Yeah.
That's happened to me.
Yeah.
Every week.
Yeah.
So.
But it's something that was really interesting to you. So your brain like glommed onto it and won't let go.
Yeah. And it's like, I want to give this the weight it kind of deserves and like the fun drama of the situation. So, hey,
heads up.
I want to like talk a little bit about this. We don't have to talk about what we're going to talk about. I just want you to be in that mindset and thinking about it, if that's cool.
That's so good. And then when that way, when you point the spotlight at them, they're ready and they've thought of some things and they can weave it in like appropriately.
And people show up with stuff written, all sorts. It's great.
So good.
Yeah. Especially when it's something that they're excited about with their character. Mm-hmm. And then they get to prepare for it instead of just like having to pull it out of their ass in the moment.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sort of torn on that. Like some of the most, I think you have to kind of do a balance of that because yeah, like nobody likes being caught off guard when they can't think of something. Mm-hmm. But it's also like sometimes the greatest things are the things that you don't have a bunch of time to think about. I think some of the absolute most beautiful, amazing things that have entered campaigns I've GM'd are things that people like came up with on the spot or happened by accident.
Yeah, yeah.
And just for whatever reason became kind of like centers of the campaign.
I'm dealing with that right now.
Yeah.
Well, dealing with that. I'm enjoying that right now with my like once a month in-person crew because one of the players said she was talking about how she needed a lot of this one particular thing. All right, it was lube. She said she wanted a barrel of lube.
Okay.
And I said, no, you want a barrel of lube from the barrel of, which I was like, it's like a Costco, but in Aldgate. And the entire group has glommed onto it so much that it is now the center point of the campaign. Yesterday, they all stood up and ripped open their jackets and they had t-shirts on that were for the Saddle Ranch, the Texas Saddle Ranch Roadhouse. Brought to you by Barolo, because it becomes such a big thing. And then they like they gave me a shirt and they wrote me like the sweetest note.
Aww.
And I totally cried and gave everybody
hugs. Oh, that's so cute. I thought you meant like in game. They all had like Barolo lube shirts. So it's like that's cool. It's like so fun.
No,
but like in like, real.
Oh, yeah,
that's I'll dedication. Show you a picture. That's very
not right
good.
Now, but
that's awesome. That when something is so important to players that they like have like they bring like. Props or like matching outfits. It's so good.
Yeah. And they adopted one of the Barolo kids. Yeah. Who like, I just made like this 14-year-old nerdy kid who like had a little crush on one of them. And he kind of talked like this. And he was like, here you go. Here's your cake. And I just wanted to do a funny voice. And they were like, one of the guys was like, we want to take you. And he was like, I want to be a knight, you know?
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So they're like using him to cook stuff and watch their Vardo.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Mm-hmm. I think kind of like give credit where credit is due, like where I learned some of the best things. One, like I think honestly, paying attention to the pacing of television and movies is huge.
Huge.
And knowing like how to feel out those moments of, and let's switch to this person or things like that. If you do a good job and your party's all in the same place, you don't have to worry about it quite so much. Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm a huge proponent of people splitting off and doing different things as long as the GM can like pace it, which that's why you watch soap operas, right?
Yeah.
I was actually thinking about that the other day.
Or lost.
But my quintessential memory of being sick as a kid is like, because we couldn't afford cable, so we didn't have cable. So it was like being sick at home and like watching soap operas for a big chunk of the day and not knowing who these people were and trying to like figure out what was happening because I didn't get to stay home and watch them. And it's like, you know, they move it like 2 minutes a week or 2 minutes a day or whatever it is. It's something ridiculous. So it's like three big, meaningful conversations are happening. I can't believe you cheated on me. I can't believe that your baby is actually so-and-so's like twin clone or whatever it is. And I'm just like 8 or 9 and like trying to parse this out like while I have a fever.
What's going on?
Yeah. I'm like eating popsicles. And like I was thinking about that the other day because my kid was sick this week. So she stayed home from school. Luckily, I was on spring break, so I didn't have to take days off work. But like, she just like has any content she wants on demand.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's none of this you have to suffer through whatever's on TV. Like, she just has like made to order whatever she wants when she doesn't feel well. And I'm just like, I guess that's good. But how are you going to GM when you get older, kid? If you don't watch soap operas, sorry, that's not what I was thinking.
I, as a kid, remember there was some point where I think I may have been homesick and had this soap opera on, and my mom came in the room and like switched it over to The Price is Right because she said,
yes.
And she said, no, I don't want you watching soap operas. But what I heard was, I don't want you watching soap boppers.
Oh.
So they're soap boppers.
Soap boppers, nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. The Price is Right was on during the day.
Yeah, Price Your Luck.
Yeah.
Card Sharks.
Yeah. All those things like middle of the day TV.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. All right. Anyway. Sorry, I was just like, I don't know why I went down that tangent, but it was just kind of an interesting,
Yeah, it's that. And then also, like, I think the biggest skill that I have learned, and like, this is something that is not easy for some people to learn or somewhat impossible for some people to learn. And then also, it's not one of those things that, like, I can give you advice on how to do it. You just got to, like, do it a lot. Is just reading the room.
Yeah.
Like noticing when people start picking up their phones or are not really paying attention anymore. Mm-hmm. And you've gotten enough done over here that now you can go over there and engage them a little bit. And then as the other players start to get bored, you come back to them. Yeah. And that's just, it's hard.
It is. And a lot. And like you said, like there are some things that you can't be just told how to do. Like you can be told how to do it, but then it takes practice.
Mm-hmm.
Like singing, dancing, all these things that like you just have to practice. Like someone could tell me how to tap dance all day long.
Oh yeah. And Phil will do that.
And yeah. This is what happens when you have a friend whose friendship is old enough to drink. They start talking about your exes at you. Oh
shit, that's right.
That's
should
right.
Have said Steven. But it makes
they're
more
fine.
Sense.
Yeah. Oh, but yeah, no, a lot of tap dancing talk, but I can't tap. Like worth at, yeah. Like at all, at nothing.
I can do this.
Yeah, I'm like, you know. I can do, like, yeah, I can, no. But so like, there's just some things that take practice because you have to build up the muscle memory, the feel for it.
Mm-hmm.
And GMing is one of those things where some of those things are just things you have to get better with at practice. And you have to kind of accept that, like tap dancing or singing. You're not going to be very good at it at first.
Yeah.
And you just have to kind of be like,
just embrace the suck.
Yeah.
You know?
And don't stop. Don't stop doing it. Just keep practicing it.
Yeah. Cause you'll get better. And also, like, jamming is very often very low stakes. So even if you suck at it, people can have a really good time.
They have amazing time. Yeah, 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 especially. And especially with sharing the spotlight, like a lot of times that's something people are very ready to give feedback on. Like other, sometimes people like hesitate to like critique your story or things like that because those are, those feel more personal.
Mm-hmm.
But I, at least in my experience, when people are doing Rose and Thorns or Stars and Wishes or whatever, or if you're just being like, hey, did you like everything? Like a lot of times people will say, I would love to have more time with my character. Like that's mm-hmm. something that people are often, not always, but often more willing to say rather than critiques of like, I hate the villain or I don't like how you do this or whatever. Mm. So I think that's
the storyline is stupid.
Terrible. Yeah. I think that's something that's easier to get feedback on as you're learning to GM than other types of feedback.
Yeah.
Cool.
All right.
Mailbag number one.
Let's get to that mailbag.
Why don't you read it for us?
I'll take it. Hello to the Jacks, Jills, and possible Pills that might read this. I've been lucky enough to hang out and play Mage with Derek, even if he forbids us to watch Adam run it, if only to avoid house rule collusions. Or collisions.
Collisions. Shockingly, Adam house rules a lot of Mage.
What?
I don't know why. Like, we never do that here at Happy Jacks. We follow the rules to the letter at all times.
All times.
For every system. Yeah,
I'm certainly
stop
not.
Stop laughing. Stop. Stop. You. Yes, you. Stop laughing. All right, continue.
Okay.
I was talking to you at home, by the way, not at Inky. You stop laughing.
I have had a blast playing games on the regular with other grown-ups for a couple of months here. Trying to avoid the whole, let me tell you about my character montage here, but his primary motivation is helping people become the best version of themselves and has kind of pissed off the main antagonist every chance he could. Yay! I like this character. I am kind of neurospicy on the ASD side of things, but tend to cover it reasonably well. A side of that is that I never know where I am at with social interactions. GMing, for example, is really hard in general post-game because reading a room is impossible. Similarly, insecurity demons have shown up to talk to my brain about maybe you are making the plot about your guy way too much in this campaign. I don't think I'm bossing people around, but people are hard. Word.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No adult conversations have been had. I'm trying to apply my follow, lead, or get out of the way mentality, which I read ahead and I really like this. Follow. If someone is doing something, help let them lead.
Mm-hmm.
Lead. If no one is doing anything, my bad idea is better than nothing. Get out of the way. I don't even need to be in this scene. I'm going to watch. My question to you all is, how do you as a player try to avoid pulling the spotlight onto yourself? Follow up. Is it sometimes okay to feel like the center of tension for an arc? Thanks for all you do. Byron, JD Grizz on the Discord.
I think we need to start at the end.
Yeah.
Yes, it's absolutely fine for your character to be the center of attention for some arcs.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You should want that and expect that. That's,
yes.
It should not be something that, it should never be your turn to be the center of attention.
Yeah. I've heard some people who say like, oh, I hate it when players have character backstories because like, then it's about you and like you're at some point. I'm like, well, I always have somebody who's like the main part of a character arc, but I also reassure the other players, we're going to get to you. Don't worry about it. But
yeah.
This person is kind of the center of this story and we're going to get to everybody.
I think that's one of the things that comes with like building up a relationship with your players as a GM.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we're going to talk about from the player side of it in a second, JD, but like people understanding that you're going to get to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that, especially if you're good about sharing the spotlight in a specific session and you start, and people can see you're following what the story needs and not just like forcing it down your throat. If it makes sense for a story to follow a specific character, then they're more willing to go along with it. As long as you make sure that they have ways to contribute to their narrative as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, once you build up that trust of, hey, this, we're telling the best story together, then they're like more willing to be like, okay, well, you know, this session and next session are probably going to be about this character. Then it'll be someone else's turn. And then, it'll be, you know, and then like everyone gets their shot.
Mm-hmm.
And that way they don't get stressed about it, I think.
Yeah. And there's even when it's your turn to be this, that, to have the spotlight on you, which can be very uncomfortable, especially for us neuro spicy people, you can still make it a team effort. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the rest of the players will go like, this decision has to be up to you. And I've seen that happen too. But yeah, if you're a generous player, everyone's going to enjoy your storyline.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. And I think going now to kind of your first question, how do you as a player try to avoid pulling the spotlight unto yourself? I think the first thing you need to ask yourself, especially as a neurospicy variety, is, are you doing that too much? Mm-hmm. Are you giving everyone else the spotlight all the time so you're not getting it? Because we tend to, like you said, people are really hard. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to kind of read the room. That's why as a GM who's neurospicy, you need to like practice. Understanding if we're taking too much of the spotlight and also if we're giving it away too much. Those are both things that we tend to do.
Mm-hmm.
Because balancing those two things is hard for us. We either feel, oh, I'm so selfish, I'm taking it all the time, or we don't recognize that we are being selfish and taking it all the time. Which
yeah.
is like the conundrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've definitely had, I'm sure you can't imagine this, but on occasion, I have taken the spotlight and run with it.
What?
I know. Crazy.
Amazing. Also, we always play everything by the rules, like as written on Happy Tunes. Yeah, so.
And yeah, so I tend to be very self-conscious of that these days. If I'm playing in a game of like, I, you know, like the get out of the way thing, like I don't need to be in this scene. Like that's a thing I think a lot of people don't even ask themselves, because I've noticed even some very good players who always want to talk during other people's scenes.
Yes.
And just like, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Let them do their thing. And some people just doesn't occur to them that maybe they should just be quiet.
Yeah. No,
and,
for sure.
Yeah. And I've definitely had moments of like, there's nothing that hurts more in my soul than letting the joke go.
Yes.
And letting it die before it even sees air.
Yeah.
I would rather have a bad joke in the air than have, any joke die inside me, but yeah. Like when two people are having like a good moment,
yeah,
I have had to learn, shut the fuck up.
And I am so proud, and not to sound like patronizing, but like, again, having a friendship that's almost old enough to drink.
Yeah.
Like it's been remarkable, like seeing honestly over all these years, like, I'm very proud of you for that.
Well, thank you.
As a friend.
Yeah, I like to work on myself.
Yeah, you did. Mm-hmm. But yeah, recognizing that in yourself, one, takes a lot of work. Like even just being able to recognize that. Most people have struggled to even recognize things like that with themselves. And then like to put in the work to actually do something about it and change that. It's hard. And I think on the opposite end, I think there's people who constantly are trying to not be the center of attention. And are constantly, like, even if they have things to contribute, they hesitate to do it, or they give it to someone else. That's another thing I've seen players do and have occasionally done myself, because I tend to be the opposite. I tend to not be the one who inserts myself all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I tend to monitor things. And then if there's like a quiet moment, I'll like step in to like fill the silence or to bring people together.
Yeah.
Like, again, like constantly managing everybody. If someone has a great idea, mm-hmm. they'll like share it with someone else, like on Slack or writing a note or telling them. So then the other person, like the other character, comes up with the idea.
Yeah.
Which sometimes makes more sense. And that's incredibly giving as a player. But if you're always doing that, then...
then you're just playing other people's characters.
Well, it's...
almost.
I mean, yeah, in some way. Yeah. But it's also like... I mean, I'm not going to say that's wrong, because if you're having a great time and you just don't want to be, you know, if you, sometimes it's awesome to always be the sidekick. It's very cool to be the Robin to Batman mm-hmm. all the time. And if that's like a character choice you've chosen, that's fine. But even Robin gets storylines in the comics sometimes.
Yeah.
You know? So just making sure that you're recognizing when it's appropriate for your character to be the center. Which can be really hard. And there's going to be moments, hopefully, where the GM creates a situation that is clearly for your character. Whether that's a minute, like where some move or spell or something, whatever ability of yours is like the key, or if it's something with your backstory or with your relationship with another character, whatever it is, like when those moments present themselves, take them. Mm-hmm. Take that. They are provided for you with a red carpet and the spotlight is waiting with like nice soft bounce lights. It's all there to make you look good and like do it. Mm-hmm. Take it. It's not selfish if people are presenting you an opportunity and you accept it. So yeah. I think that's something to keep in mind too. If you're having trouble just reading the room, like ask the GM off screen, like, hey, could there be an opportunity for my character sometime soon? And like not, maybe not sometime soon. That sounds a little confrontational, but I would love to have some cool moments for my character coming up. Mm-hmm. And then when they present them to you, like just take them. Then that's the easiest way to deal with that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's the hardest thing. It's like, can be. Yeah. And I think that again, is like one of those things where you got to feel it out and eventually learn it. Like today, Jason threw me like a little happy piece in our Pinnacles game at happyjacks.org. Pinnacles, right? Yeah.
Slash Pinnacles. Yeah.
Slash Pinnacles. And yeah. And I just like, I had to take like two moments from the day. And one of them, it was just like, it was something that my character is going through, but also like I have struggled with in the past. And it definitely brought up a lot of emotions and it was wonderful. And then I had to go against what the party was doing at one point, but only for like a turn. Just so that I could, I don't want to spoil it for people who haven't listened yet, but yeah. But I felt really good about that because it was also not all about me. It was just all about me for a very short time. Yeah.
Well, and like, that sounds like it's a moment that was created on purpose by the GM.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's a big difference. And I think, you know, it is hard sometimes to tell the moments that are created by the collaboration of the table for your character and someone who just slams in the door, like Gaston style, like shoves everyone else out of the way and like takes the spotlight. Those are two very different things.
It's all about me.
Yeah. And until we've been on stage for long enough, we kind of harmonized. That was good.
Yeah. Exactly.
I think you've got to allow yourself to start figuring out the difference of, and not conflating those two things.
Mm-hmm.
There's a difference between demanding and stealing the spotlight and simply stepping into it when it's offered to you.
Mm-hmm.
And any good group is giving you those opportunities to just step in.
Yeah.
I hope that helps. I don't know if that helps. I feel like we talked a lot about stage lighting. Whenever we talk about spotlights, inevitably I...
Yeah. And I think like, as a GM, like one of the things that I will actually do is sit down and go like, all right, here's the storyline that's going on. Mm-hmm. Here are the ideas that I have for the characters. And I'll write down all the characters and realize I have three of them that I have ideas for. And I got to come up with two more.
Yeah.
So.
And it's okay to ask.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you want to like shoot them a text. Hey, like what are some things you'd love to have like opportunities or story beats for your character? Like you don't have to, as the GM, create them all.
Mm-hmm.
Like let the players ask you for what they want and then just give them what they want. Maybe not as they expect or in the order that they want.
Certainly make sure it's twisted like a promise to an archfey.
Exactly. Exactly. But they will let you know. And a lot of times just looking at their character sheets tells you what they want.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm a loner. I'm alone all the time and I'm alone and I'm lonely and I'm alone.
Alone and I have nobody.
Nobody.
Nobody that I'm related to.
My sword is my best friend. It's like, do you want...
And I don't trust people.
Yeah. Should you get kicked out of this game or do you want friends? It's like, obviously you want... I mean, it's like Batman. Like, again, I'm reading a Batman comic right now. This is why it keeps coming up. But it's like, Batman, like, no, has no friends. It's like, no, he adopts every child he meets.
Everyone.
And turns, like, he has, the Bat family is legit a thing. Like, exactly. It's like, they have so many people. Like, yeah. So.
Yeah. I had, well, just a little aside, particularly on that, because I have like some very strong feelings about that, is that making a character playing in a game is an act of vulnerability. And it is trusting in your GM. And I believe that that trust has to be earned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so when people are like, I don't have anything that I'm actually connected to, or like, I have no ways for you to get me.
Mm-hmm.
That means that they have been hurt.
Yes.
Before, and are trying to protect themselves, and might take a little bit of trust building to do that. Like, I had my friend Craig, who played a dwarf in my campaign 30 years ago. I was like, who is your family? And he's like, I don't have a family. I'm like, you're a dwarf. You guys like have huge families. You got to have some family. And he was like, nope. Nobody. And so I had a family show up. And like, it was one of the most emotional nights for him, because like, his dad was dying and he like left him his thing. And like, these were all his cousins. And he was like, I never had this connection before. And we're going to march him back up the hill into the mines. We're going to bury him, and I'm going to take over for him. Aww. And then they got attacked. And stuff happened.
Yeah.
Bad things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when I murdered that entire clan of dwarves, he felt it.
Yeah. Gosh, trust issues, right?
Yeah, I try not to do that as much
anymore. Yeah.
But yeah, that was an advanced game.
Yeah. Well, and once you have a campaign going for long enough too, you have more like wiggle room to do things like that, because there's more time to do the hills and valleys of the character story.
Yeah, because he absolutely 100% had the chance to get his revenge, rebuild his people, find some surviving family members, and feel like I won.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to rebuild. Like, this is a really terrible tragedy that happened, but we're going to rebuild and I'm going to be at the head of it.
Yeah.
So, like, I like my players to feel like the heroes.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in order to feel like a hero, you got to get knocked down sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as you're pairing it with both. Yeah.
Yeah, you can't just do.
Yeah. But I do, like, going back to, like, what you're saying, like, yeah, like, if they're making a character and they are optimizing them to not have any vulnerability in any way, yes, one, that is absolutely a sign of I've been hurt before. It's like, okay, yeah. But also, like I had someone ask me the other day, because I've been doing a bunch of rewrites on Starscape and in various Discords. I ask for input randomly. And I don't remember if it was Happy Jack's Discord or any of the other ones I'm on. Like, someone was like, well, with the way you've written this mechanic, like, if they just decide that they're a loner that never engages with anybody, like they're not going to be able to, like, I forget what it was. Like, they basically wouldn't be able to play. I'm like, yeah. Like, it's literally written, like,
it's gamifying. Yeah. You have to engage with the game.
Yeah. It's, you are a found family on a spaceship. Like, you can't just be, I mean, like, yes, you can be a loner for a certain number of sessions, and eventually you will have to leave or something. Like, the way the mechanics work, you run out of the economy that is in the game, and you either have to change playbooks or you have to do something. It's in, because I very specifically designed that, and they were like, oh. So, thank you for confirming that I did exactly what I wanted to do with that. But it's also one of those things that's like, if you're playing that way, you're not engaging with the game anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm not really worried about that. Like, I don't want to waste time designing for everybody who might pick up the game to play it wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely a waste of time.
Yeah, it's like someone trying to picking up D&D and being like, I am going to play a pacifist who won't fight at all.
Uh-huh.
Which just happens.
Uh-huh.
And like, games I've set, and I've been like,
I'm like, this is a game about killing monsters.
Yeah. Like,
that's what all these books are about.
Yeah.
It's about how to kill them, or like the monsters.
Yeah. It's like literally all it is. Like, if you want to play that game, I am all for playing that game.
Yeah.
But not in this system. Pick a different system.
Yeah.
Like, there's lots of other systems where you can play a pacifist, have very meaningful emotional things, like go up against people who disagree with you about your pacifist life. D&D is not, like, you're not
the place to be a pacifist.
Yeah, you're not buying into the premise of the mechanics. Speaking of trauma.
But yeah.
About game trauma.
Both need to take a breath. But actually, this ties into mailbag number two.
amazing.
What?
We're like very well planned.
Look at you like a pro.
I'm just kind of like, these are kind of all about the same thing. It's just, it's our years of performing together that's made right. it seamless. All right.
Magic.
Mailbag number two. Dearest Jackasses, I'm Connor from Ireland. Here's the GM question, but I won't. I'm not going to just make you sound like a leprechaun. I'm sorry.
Sweet Jesus.
Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Yeah. But I would certainly like to know how people feel about it as a player, too. It's like the one. I have two accents, two and a half accents. Irish-ish is one of them.
I have like at least three different Irish accents.
Yeah. So. Much better. Mine goes in and out. And every time I start losing it, you'll hear me go randomly, Jesus, Mary and Joseph, because that's how I get it.
That's your touchstone.
Yeah, that's my touchstone. Mm-hmm. But it's a little, it's less helpful in a role-playing game. You're like, okay, she's saying that again. She says it a lot. All right. How do you deal with that one player whose character has to be talked into everything? For example, a course of action is suggested and that character doesn't want to do it. But it's every time anyone suggests anything. In extreme cases, it can even be that they don't want anyone to do whatever it is, even if it doesn't involve their own character, until everyone stops and talks them into it. And on like that every session. This is something that I've encountered relatively infrequently, but I haven't seen much talk about it. So I thought I'd ask you kind folks. Thanks a lot, Connor, from Ireland.
From Ireland.
From Ireland.
Yeah, I have no opinion on this.
Yeah. So, okay, I'm going to breeze over the you need to have an adult conversation because I think that's a given.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. out of
you,
character.
You need to say, hey, look, it's your job to figure out why your character needs to go on these adventures, yes. not ours. And you're making it all about you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You need to start. So it's already started. Yeah. I'm down the road, Kimmy.
Take a breath. Take a breath. Thank you. So I think we're assuming that this is, at least from this email, I'm going to assume it's about the PC. So it's about the character, yes. the characterization. So it's not the player doesn't want to do the thing. Not like, well, I'm worried if we go in there without planning, like there'll be like something, you know, like there's a difference between a player having to be talked into everything and a character being talked into everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I think specifically this says the character has to be talked into everything. That can be fun to play in specific ways.
Absolutely.
So I think like being difficult or being whiny, like there's always again, using TV as like the thing, there's always like the character's like, what about this? And like, well, what? And mm-hmm. they're usually a sidekicky character and they provide a necessary like exposition often. Like the audience maybe doesn't know that this cave has a dangerous thing in it. Well, I don't want to go in there because blah, blah, blah. Remember, Granny used to tell us that there's a giant snake creature in there. Oh, don't be ridiculous. That was just grandma's old story, you know, whatever it mm-hmm. is. So I don't want to say that no one should ever play that character because I've played that character and it can be very fun.
Mm-hmm.
But
I have a friend, one of my favorite players I've ever played with. It was her first game. She had never played any game before in her life and showed up knowing more about character creation than I did. Mm-hmm. And like, put this whole thing together and she was playing this like grumpy half orc, like roguish type of character, Savage World. So no real class, but that was basically thing, but like rogue barbarian. Mm-hmm. And they go into the first town and the hook shows up and the paladin is like, I think we should go out there and do something. And she just grabs her drink back to the windows and just goes, sounds like a town problem to me. But and I knew this somehow. Mm-hmm. She was looking for a reason for her character to go on the adventure. Yeah. So when the main bad guy made the unforgivable sin of referring to himself in the third person,
ooh.
She went outside and she started driving the action. She walked up to him and punched him right out.
There you go.
That bad guy was Elmo.
Amazing. Oh, yeah, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
No, I have a toddler. I didn't need you to explain the reference. I know all about Elmo. Especially Like when you accidentally step on a Tickle Me Elmo in the night, it's the creepiest fucking sounds. It's just like, oh my God.
This is the thing horror films are made of.
Yeah, like you, because you're like, inevitably, it's like your kid's like asleep. You're like sneaking into their room for something. It's like, okay, I don't want them to wake up. So you've got the double horror of this creepy laughing noise randomly appearing after you've stepped on something's neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then the horror of, oh, did they wake up? So it's like, it's all a very stressful situation. So, but yeah, anyway. Yeah. And I think that's a great example.
Yeah.
Like you need to come up with things that work with their character. You might have to ask them out of character, like ask the player, like, what are some things we can do? And I like to think of it in terms of like carrot and stick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all right, there's not that the other characters need to punish them, but like, hey, you know, we heard so-and-so speaks about themselves in the third person. You hate that. Maybe you should, you know, and like dangle that carrot. Like, you like punching Elmo. Go, I hear the Elmo's over there.
Punch me,
like,
Elmo.
Yeah. So punch me, Elmo. Someday. And offering that. Or as a GM, it shouldn't be on the other characters to provide the stick. But as the GM, you should do it on the up and up. Like, you should not be just doing this to, like, drive the action. Like, be like, all right, so you realize that in about 10 minutes, the city guard's going to show up, and the fight you all just had, you're all going to, you know, whoever's left is going to get lugged off to the thing. You should probably leave town.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, that's, like, giving them that time frame to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Don't just be like, oh, the city guard shows up, and you're all going to arrest you. It's like, yeah, give them time. Like, you hear the bell ringing, you know the city guard has been summoned.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, oh. And then if they decide they're going to sit there, okay, then that's like, again, like...
My Saturday crew did exactly that. They went to a brothel where they had to take out a pirate crew, and they took out the pirate crew, blowing up partially part of the brothel.
Oh.
All of the ladies were fine.
Okay.
And then, like, went back to their ship and went to sleep. And I asked them 3 or 4 times, I'm like, hey, you know that the rumblers in this town, the cops, they do not put up with this shit, and they are no one to be trifled with.
Yeah.
And I warned them 3 or 4 times, and then they just showed up with all these wagons full of guns and shit.
Did they think that they wouldn't know it was them?
I don't know.
Okay.
No.
They knew it was them. Okay.
They knew that consequences were coming.
Yeah.
They just mentioned it yesterday where they were like, yeah, I don't know what we're thinking.
Because I could see maybe that if they thought that they'd covered their tracks and it was like, they'd think it was somebody else. And,
no,
okay. Especially if you're on a ship, just like, sail it out a little ways.
They could sail away, but they were talking about like going to the pirate ship,
mm-hmm.
you know, that this crew was from and looting it or sinking it or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was like, so you're just going to sit on that boat in the bay and like at dock and just go to sleep?
Yeah.
Yep. Like, seriously, that's all you're going to do?
At least that wasn't just one character, though.
That was the whole party.
Like, if the whole party agrees on it, if they're going to sit in that tavern until the cops show up, okay, go for it.
And, you know, sometimes things aren't as clear. Mm-hmm. So I find clarifying them a couple of times just to make sure that, like, I've explained it right, because sometimes don't.
Yeah.
Sometimes the things that I've written in my head don't
come out of
my mouth.
So you're thinking it very loudly, but for some reason they're not hearing
it. Yeah, yeah. Like, weird. Why can't you see the thing that's in my head?
Yeah.
And sometimes my mouth just literally skips words.
Yeah.
Yeah. But.
Yeah. So I think, like, with that, like, you gave, there was a carrot or a stick coming, and they knew, and they just either, like, didn't think about it or didn't care. So I think that's a really good example of a stick.
Yeah.
So I think always try and go with the carrot if you can. And especially if the other characters can be the ones providing the carrot. Like, you know, wanting to punch Elmo or something else that the character really likes.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe they like getting in fights. Maybe that's going to be the thing.
That's right.
Or maybe they like gems. So it's like, okay, like, you will get all the gems. We'll split the rest of us will just take coins. You get to keep all the gems from the next thing we loot.
Yeah, and in chat they're saying Scooby snacks.
Scooby snacks.
You gotta give them the Scooby snack.
Exactly. But
yeah, I've run into this the player who does this, and it's not necessarily the player. I had one guy, we were playing this one campaign where he was playing this character who every time would leave when we were all like sitting around, like being a group, and he would leave and he'd go off and do something else and like had to be talked into doing stuff. And I just remember being like, dude, you gotta stick with the group. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even running the game. Mm-hmm. And I was, and he's like, well, my character. And I'm like, yeah, but like, that means you're like, your character's, you're just, because that's what your character might do, doesn't mean that's what you should be doing. Right. You gotta figure out a reason to stay with the group because that's how this game is played.
Yeah, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, like, this is a group effort. And the same thing goes with like, if I've got 3-4 players who are playing big damn heroes, mm-hmm. and then one character who's playing, I don't care about anything but me.
Yeah.
You know, then that can be a problem. And like, maybe they need to make a different character.
Yeah.
If they can't adjust to like, because I'm like, I've had this where I've been like, I need you to go with the group.
Yeah.
Like, it's exhausting for us to have to talk your character into going on the adventure every time.
Yeah. Well, and then, like, yeah, like, going back to the adult conversation, mm-hmm. I don't even think, like, it doesn't even, like, it can, like, sometimes you get to the point where it's just like a cut this the fuck. But I think it might be healthier and better for friendships long term. Mm-hmm. Like, if you start off as like, hey, I've noticed your character does this. I think it's very interesting. What can we do as a story arc to build, have them build that trust in the rest of the party so that this won't happen all the time? Mm-hmm. Or maybe this only happens with specific things. Like if your character is terrified of the dark, mm-hmm. I could see why they'd push back and not want to ever go into caves or dungeons.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, stuff like that. And
but there's got to be a way, like, can we get some goggles?
Yeah, or so, yeah, exactly. Like, figure that out. Or maybe as a GM, you balance that out. So, okay, we're going to have some fights above ground. Like, don't run like an all drow fighting campaign in the dark, you know, in the darkness of the underworld, underdark, yeah. That it is. I don't run D&D.
I don't go to the Underdark. I don't like it.
Yeah. I don't like it.
No, yeah.
Like, find that balance of, okay, we're going to go on a ship and we're going to, that's where this adventure is going to go for a while. It's going to be really sunny. Mediterranean, like, mm-hmm. with the ship battles are coming your way because you don't like the dark. That's great. But in addition to that, like, we're going to have, like, maybe there's, it's not, like, maybe they can bond with another character who they really trust.
Yeah.
So, like, okay, they're terrified of going to the dark. Maybe if they're standing right next to their best friend, they have the courage to do that. So work with them because you can end up with some really great character connections and character building from that hesitation. That just contributes to how memorable the campaign can be. Because mm-hmm. it seems like, assuming they're playing in good faith,
yes.
they're not just a jerk who wants to be the center of attention, this might be their way of character, you know, like having character
yeah.
and characterization by being kind of the negative, no, we can't do that. It's too dangerous. Like that might be them trying to give personality to a character. So help them with that and facilitate that becoming something more interesting that isn't always contrary to the group.
Yeah. Like, and I just want to like reiterate this with like my friend Jasmine, who played this mm-hmm. character, Ophine, mm-hmm. who was like one of my favorite characters I've ever experienced because of how she played her distant, didn't want to get attached to anybody, took care of the entire crew, mm-hmm. right? Would lay her life down for like the rest of the adventuring party and then call them names.
Yeah.
You know, and didn't want to help anybody, mm-hmm. but was the player always looking for the reason that she would want to do it. Mm-hmm. And so when the smallest excuse came up, and even if it was like, well, your NPC girlfriend is going to be disappointed in you, you're like, fine, I'll do it.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. There's like, and that character and that dynamic was so much fun. She even did a thing where I had her father show up, who had like created yeah. her from these two separate mm-hmm. ancestries. And he was like, you're the only successful one that I've had. And mm-hmm. he's like, come with me and we'll rule the world. And she went, okay. And I went, ah! Yeah. And then he starts casting the spell, and she's like, I interrupt his spell by stabbing him in the face.
Oh, yeah. So good. Yeah. And that can be a fun iteration of this, too. Sometimes people don't know the difference between saying no and quote, air quote, fingers saying no.
Mm-hmm.
Like, gosh, I hate going to the dungeon. Oh, I just hate the dark, blah, 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 as they're walking to the dungeon with the party.
Yeah.
So they're complaining about it and saying they don't want to do it as they are doing it.
It's so gross and dark down there.
Yeah, just, I can't believe we're doing this again. Like, mm-hmm. like that can be interesting and fun to play off
Last
of.
Time a spider almost ate my head off.
Yeah. But without actually flat refusing.
Yeah.
So some players may not know the difference between those two things. So either talking to them or showing them or, you know, again, guiding them to ways that they can stay true to their character that they've made without gridlocking everything and like ruining the fun of everyone at the table. Because mm-hmm. some of my favorite characters that some of my friends have played have been super ridiculous, kind of jerky, negative people. And it's fun sometimes.
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
And yeah, like the curmudgeon, like, oh man, Stork was like curmudgeoned all the time. Curmudgeon wizards. Well, I know.
Because Stork
is on curmudgeon. Time. Yeah. but it's so, like, he would do that. He'd be like, I can't, you know, complaining as we were going doing the thing, which was always fun to play
which
off
of. Great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it wasn't, it doesn't stall things. Your character gets to act annoyed because... I can't believe he's complaining again, blah, blah, blah. And so it's just a fun dynamic that doesn't stall everything out. And some people don't realize the difference.
Mm-hmm.
There is, that's very much like a learned thing with role-playing games and improv acting too. Like, say no, but you're not really, and it's going to sound bad. Like, it's not, this is not a consent conversation. Like, so people say no, they mean no
mm-hmm.
with all that other stuff. But when you're doing a role-playing game, there's a way to say no as a character where you're not really saying no to the story.
Yeah, where you're still kind of going along with things.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So I think that's an important difference that some people need to actually just have explained to them or see or have an example before they really realize the difference there.
Yeah, I think that's some really great advice. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh.
Because my advice was like, tell them to knock the fuck off.
That too. I'm not saying that that's not possible. But
I'm like, oh no, that's a really good idea. It'd be like, hey, you know, I like that you want to do that, but let's make it work with the party better.
Yeah. And this is assuming they're not just an asshole.
Yes.
Because I don't want to give advice for people who are just assholes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like, just don't play with those people. Like anymore. Like it's not helpful. Like there's no way to fix an asshole. If they're a good faith player who just doesn't know how to do it or needs to learn or has some bad habits, put in the energy for a while. Mm-hmm. But yeah, don't,
yeah.
If they're just saying no for no's sake, if they just want to play their own game and kill all the monsters and not talk to other people and why are you talking to my experience points? Like,
I just want to gift you Baldur's Gate 3.
Yes.
There you go.
Here you go. Please don't come back to my table.
Yeah. My friend who played that character in that campaign who would always like run off and go do other things. And while we're like trying to be an adventuring party and would eventually like show up at the fight, like late, you know, things like yeah. that. And like at some point something happened and all of our characters got kidnapped. And so we played the rescue party for our characters, which was super fun. And he played one of my favorite characters ever, who was like this lizard man guy who was like, and I'm like, Jeffrey, dude, like this character is awesome. You should continue playing this character because he stays with the group.
Yeah.
And like, that's really, really fun. And he was also like, oh yeah, can we eat these guys? We just killed them. Can we eat them now? don't eat that.
No, yeah,
don't,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bruce in one of our first campaigns was really like, it was annoying, but he was so good about it. Like he was a rogue who would sneak off. He was always back. Like, he was always back before we know. So we as players know he's sneaking off and doing all this crazy shit while we're sleeping. But he was always back, so it was never a problem for our characters. And it was just like, damn it. And he would, like, fucking just, like, roll, like perfectly. And it was like, okay, I guess none of us wake up. And it didn't ruin our good time. It was just one of those things where, like, I swear, like, he's got, like, so much stuff he's stolen around town. Like, and our characters didn't know. And I think that's the way to do stuff like that. If you want to go off and do weird stuff on your own, like, great. But either be ready to pay the consequences if the other characters find out, and there should be consequences, or just be so good at it that the characters never know. And then, like, we'll all just be like, damn it, he got back before sunrise. Like, how the fuck does he do that? God damn it. And then
he's
random.
He's always sleepy.
Yeah, he's always so tired. Well, it's like the Batman thing again. Like,
yeah,
how does he never? I mean, my kid's awake half the night, and I'm like, it's sort of a zombie the next morning. I'm just like, okay, all right, let's do fractions, kids. Everything's fine. I can't imagine running like Wayne Enterprise, although he's a CIO. He probably just sleeps all day. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, this rich playboy. You don't have to do anything.
Just shows up on camera and makes wild claims that none of his engineers know about.
Yeah.
And totally talking about Bruce Wayne.
No, it's not.
Totally talking about Bruce Wayne.
I mean, like, there's problems with Batman, but he's not that problem.
No, he's not.
I was going to say that. Oh, yeah. Then there was one point in the campaign.
Uh-huh.
And, like, this is one of those moments that, like, on, going back to, like, where we learned good habits. There, God, we screwed this up so bad. There was, like, these orbs that, like, teleported us different places with these mirrors.
Mm.
And each orb was, like, a key that unlocked the magical mirror to a specific place. And I forget how it happened, but, like, it turned out, like, Bruce on one of his excursions, like, had stolen some, because he and Stu, like, figured out exactly where he went, exactly what he'd taken. Like, it was all, like, written down. Like, it wasn't just a make it up later. Like, at one point, he's like, wait a minute. Like, we'd gotten stuck somewhere. It's like, wait a minute. And he pulls out this list on his character sheet. And then it's like the next, he's like, he pulls out another orb out of his bag. And we're like, we all kind of knew he'd been off doing stuff, but our characters were like, what the fuck? Like, and it was just like one of those moments that like came full circle. And then like, I forget what it, God, it was so many years ago now. It was like 12, 13 years ago now. It's like when we first started the podcast, we were playing that 4E game.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, we like broke space time or something. Like there, it was like a different color orb and we decided to just go for it anyway.
Oh.
And we like, I don't know, we broke things. And Stu was like, okay, that session, because I have to figure out how this is going to go forward now. Because, I mean, we'd been playing for most of the session anyway, but it was just really funny. It was one of those moments where, like, wow, okay, sometimes careful note-taking is really important.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I didn't learn that as a GM. But
yeah, I very rarely take notes as a GM.
Same.
I've been really relying on that my Wednesday night group is on Zoom, so I just record it. And I've been relying on those recordings when I need things. And now that I have this in-person game, I'm like, oh no. But I keep a post-it with me. So if you've ever seen my notes, it's just like a pile of post-its crumpled up.
I just try to put Samantha in all my games and she takes amazing notes.
Oh, yeah. That's
so good.
Actually, my weekend game now, one of the players sits there and types down everything.
That's cool.
And then rewrites it into a first-person story from her character's point of view.
That's amazing.
So she always gets XP for that.
Nice, yeah.
Because I have my own XP system where it's like you get one XP like basically per adventure and like encounter and like for different things that you do that are cool that I want to reward you for.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to get three times the XP of your level to get to the next level.
Oh, okay.
And so I always give her like an extra XP for that.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Yeah. But like this last one was like 14 pages or something. It's like, oh God.
That's wild.
Yeah. And she's working fair and like working a job and has kids and stuff.
That's
and
exhausting.
I'm just like, hey, Jane, you can chill. You don't owe us this, but we love it. So
we
if you want to
so
do it, we're not going to complain.
I mean, sometimes it helps. Like Samantha does it specifically because it helps her with her being, you know, neurodiverse to stay focused and pay attention and remember things. So she started it as a way to engage with the game.
Yeah.
Because like while she's hearing and engaging in things while she's writing things down, that's how she stays focused on it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that really helps her. And then it also helps all of us. It's really cute too, because she gets like a different like journal book for each campaign. So now she's got a bunch of them and they're like themed. Like the sci-fi ones are like little sci-fi journals and like it's very cool.
That's great.
It's so neat. And like every once in a while I'm at her house and they're just like, let's look at the journals. Samantha, you said a little joke. it's like the journal. They're like this like set of like all these little like journals that are, oh, this is the motive Sun Vampire one. That's what started it all. No, actually the one that started it all was Savage Rifts.
Mm.
We played Savage Rifts and she was a teenage angsty dragon who was sort of goth, yes, and journaled and did bad poetry. It was amazing.
Fantastic.
And that just like started the whole thing. All right, we're way off topic.
We're into journaling.
All right. Thank you for joining us for season 33, episode 16 of the Happy Jacks RPG podcast. My name is Kimmy.
I'm Ingy.
Please support our amazing indie designer of the month, Logan Timmons, and listen to his amazing podcast, The Lyrical Ludology, available wherever podcasts are sold/available. They're not sold. And also at breathingstories.itch.io. Thank you to our chat mod, James V, and to our amazing Patreons who keep us ad-free and independent. Woo! You can join their incredible ranks at happyjacks.org/Patreon. Soon it will be summer here in Southern California, and we will be running the air conditioning in the studio more.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Patreons, to pay for the air conditioning so that all the air conditioning hours don't come out of my teacher's salary, because, oh my goodness,
yeah,
the air conditioning is expensive. But also, the Blade Runner RPG that just wrapped a couple weeks ago, they just recorded their kind of post-mortem on their campaign, and that will be released to Patreons soon.
Ooh.
Maybe today or tomorrow, depending. And yeah, today we are going to leave you with a song. We're going to leave you with a song called The Prick of Holly Bush, which is actually about being in jail. And it's by The Merry Wives of Windsor. Ooh. And you can find them at mwowmwow.net. Thank you all so much. Thank you for joining us, and we'll see you next week.
Bye! Bye.
Silver to set me free, or to save my body from the cold jail walls and my neck from the high gallows. I've no gold, I've no silver to set you free, for I have come for to see thee hang along the high gallows tree.
Oh, the prickle holly bush, it breaks, it breaks, it breaks my heart full sore. And if ever I get out of the prickle holly bush, I'll never go in there anymore.
Come slack your horse, cries Joan, come slack it for a while, for I think I see my sister dear riding over yonder stile. Did you bring gold? Did you bring silver to set me free? For to save my body from the cold jail walls and my neck from the high gallows tree. I've no gold, I've no silver to set you free, for I have come for to see thee hang along the high gallows tree. For the prickle holly bush, it breaks, it breaks, it breaks my heart full sore. And if ever I get out of the prickle holly bush, I'll never go in there anymore. Come slack your horse, cries Joan, come slack it for a while, for I think I see my true love dear riding over yonder stile. Did you bring gold? Did you bring silver to set me free? Or to save my body from the cold jail walls and my neck from the high gallows tree? I brought gold, I brought silver to set you free, for I've not come to see thee hang along the high gallows tree. Oh, the prickle holly bush, it breaks, it breaks, it breaks my heart full sore. And now that I'm out of the prickle holly bush, I'll never go in there anymore. Oh, the prickle holly bush, it breaks, it breaks, it breaks my heart full sore. And now that I'm out of the prickle holly bush, I'll never go in there anymore.
This show is a product of the Happy Jacks RPG Network. The Mary Sues performed our intro music, and our ending song was played with the express permission of the artist. Visit happyjacks.org for more information and to find all our streams and podcasts.